Preaching, preaching, the unknown, unknown, unknown.
Welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show with Nancy Hopkins and Walt Silva. Produced by Colleen Kelly of Haggy Shack Radio, simulcasted over Cosmic Reality Radio.
Disaster, horizon side, choose your heart as a master.
Hi everybody, you are listening to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. We're starting a little late because the one before us ran over. My name is Nancy Hopkins. The date is September 18, 2018. And with me is Walt Silva, of course, and we have our guest, Derek Condit. We're just going to talk about stuff that's out there right now. So first off, I'll say, hi, Derek. How are you doing? Are you muted? Oh, I've got you muted. now you can talk.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. I'm doing real well.
Yeah, and there's my Walt. Hi, Walt.
Hello. Hello, Nancy. Hello, Derek. Hello, everybody in Radio Land.
How are you doing tonight?
Cool. It cooled down. The last 3 days was like broiling hot out here. It finally rained. I asked for a little bit of rain, so it finally rained, and the plants got a lot of moisture. So it was getting really hot.
But that wasn't anything to do with Florence, right?
Because Florence is way away from me. That's over 1,000 miles away.
It seems like if it's raining, it's somehow attached to Florence out there right now. That poor storm got such bad press. Oh, it's going to kill us all.
Oh, did you see the fake news posts? Bob Kelleher is one of the people putting the recording on Facebook. Someone took the time to record it with their smartphone newscast on the television, and you see this these weathermen that go out in the field to report, you know, the weather, and you see he's wearing a full blown, you know, rainproof overcoat, and he's braving the wind, and he's leaning against the wind so that the wind doesn't blow him away, poor guy. And he's, you know, you hear him in his voice, the stress, you know, trying to stand upright against the wind. And right behind him, two teenagers are working nonchalantly down the road. They're minding their business, just talking. This guy is doing all this mimicking that he's fighting against this gale force wind, and it's just for sure he's performing for the camera.
Do you have that tape? Where was it posted?
It's on several people were copying it back and forth on Facebook. Let me look at it. I'll give you the link. It was so funny. So I thought, yeah, don't put any fake news, not for my sake. Hold on a second.
It's not raining in Washington, is it? Derek, are you
No,
good?
Not now. Yeah, we're good right now.
We had a show, the Shungite show, earlier today, and we were talking to Julie Roberts, who's in Massachusetts, and she was getting rained on by Florence. And it's still, you know, packing rain, but it's on its way all the way up to Maine, and then back out into the ocean, I suspect, or hopefully it's dissipated by then. Anyway, so believe me, I understand those people that went through a flood. I've done it many times. But as we were talking about the energies of the storms, I mean, you either buy into the fact that there's man-made storms and that's all that's happening out there, or you have a belief system that says, no, there are natural storms that Gaia uses in order to move energy. I mean, just from the standpoint of moving heat energy, a hurricane is designed to take the heat energy of the equator area and bring it north into the northern Atlantic area.
Fulford has something to say about the storms also.
Oh, he does. On yesterday I did a interview that somebody did with Ben. It was an hour interview. Mm. He's rather lame in person. I was like, oh wow. You know how some people are better writers? I was not impressed. He just was lame. But anyway, what's he saying?
You'll have to let me read the report. I'm putting the link on the radio chat to that Facebook. Let me put it on Skype chat in case you want a link on that. It's so funny to see the play acting for the camera. It's up to you. You want me to read it?
Yes. A lot of people give us grief about Ben, because in many cases he comes up a little lame. But the thing of it is that even when he's lame, he's giving us things to talk about, to think about, and to start the show with.
So far, the stuff that he has said was going to happen, you've been seeing it happening from other fronts. Either Wilcock is talking about it, or you're telling me, do you know what QAnon just recently said? And like, for example, a couple of our listeners who live here in Minnesota was asking me that in the last show, Nancy said something about September 20th. And I said, I do remember her saying that date, but I don't remember in particular what she had to say about the date. I didn't remember. And then here I see it. Fulford is talking about the significance of September 20th. So I thought, I bet you Nancy knew about this, and that's why she said it on the last show.
Well, what I said last show was that the president had declared the month of September the month of preparation, and on the 20th they're going to do an emergency broadcast. It's a new system that I think it was set up in Obama's time, but it's never been tested. Mm. So that was what I was referencing.
Yeah, he talks about that as well in this report.
Well, go ahead. Let us hear it.
Okay. It begins like this. There is a very real chance the Hazarian cabal rule will collapse over the next 3 months, and alternative power structures need to be made ready in time for that, according to British MI6 intelligence sources. The trigger is expected to be arrests of senior cabalists in the U.S. starting in October, the sources say. Pentagon sources, for their part, said the cabal has been deaf and blind for over 2 weeks, so big things should happen after Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court confirmation. Kavanaugh is poised to be confirmed after Yom Kippur on September 20th, and on the same day, U.S. President Donald Trump may send text to all cell phones to reach even more people than Twitter. Furthermore, the sources say FEMA will also test the emergency broadcast system on all televisions. So this, when combined with wireless text alerts, will allow Trump to spread real news in real time and drop truth bombs. End of quote. The exact nature of what will be told to the American people through the emergency broadcast system is not yet clear. However, last week, representatives of the Swiss banking gnomes in Zurich, the Russian FSB, MI6, the Japanese royal family, and an Asian secret society all contacted the White Dragon Society last week. The fact that these sources, many of whom had ceased contact since the March 11, 2011 Fukushima nuclear and tsunami terrorist attack, suddenly popped out of the woodwork is a clear indication something huge is about to happen. CIA sources connected to the secret bases in Antarctica say the sudden surge of activity in the intelligence community was related to the sudden closure last week of 7 solar observatories. In particular, the sources say, the solar observatory in Sunspot, New Mexico, has been observing, in quotes, the sun since the Roswell incident. They belong to a special off-the-grid group known as, in quotes, the Watchers. There are several of these special observatories strategically placed around the planet. They have files full of photos and video recordings of the wing maker ships coming through the sun, as well as the big ships coming through as part of the Galactic Federation's Observe and Assist Humanity mandate. The Cabal Deep State is backed up against the wall. They are grasping for feathers now. They went in and grabbed everything out of fear and panic. Gag orders have been issued. We don't know the final play yet. This may turn against them and be used as the main act of the disclosure event. Close quotes. The source sent the following three photographs of the observations that led to the closure of the observatories. And those are those pictures that you see that look like yellowish pictures. I sent you the link on the Facebook chat, and then I also posted it, Center for Cosmic Reality, and it shows those images of the all those forms outside the sun. It looks like a swarm of bees, you know, coming out of the sun.
Well, I didn't see them coming out of the sun. My actual perception is, when it was first occurring, when they shut down the facility, mm-hmm. and I found out about it on the 11th. It was actually the 9th that they shut it down, and my feeling was that whatever was happening didn't necessarily. I thought that they were that. First off, the fact that it was got the mainstream media was talking about it means that this information was. They wanted the public to know this. You know, this wasn't something that was a spooky. I'm not going to tell you thing. This is. I'm in your face and I'm telling you. We just shut those things down so you can't see what's happening. Right. So. But I felt like there was an enormous amount of underground stuff happening. That's why the post office got shut down too, was because it was
the post office.
Yeah, the post office just down the street from it. Both the post office got evacuated and the observatory at the same time security reasons by the FBI. Now, a lot of people think that the or maybe rightfully so, but they. There's enough information indicating that the FBI is very, very dirty. I mean, that's a fact. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other side of it, I think that there's two factions in the FBI, and that the dark side that's been controlled and mucked with, really aren't in play. This was the White Hats doing this to get our attention. Not our attention so much as the attention of the people, and then there had been this very bizarre picture of the sun with a huge. I mean, the whole top, the northern top of the planet, our sun was black, right? I mean, I've never seen anything quite as large as that. It was black. And then I see these pictures of this, these vehicles. I thought they were ships, but I couldn't quite get a remote on it. It was like, you know, normally if something like that's happening, I can just pop out of body and go look at it. But it was like, nope. And I'm going like, oh, okay, interesting. So today I laid down and I said, come on, I got a radio show to do. Can you give me a little glimpse of this? I got to look like I know what is happening.
Talk about preparedness.
Right, yeah, right. You know, give me something to work with here. So this time, yes, I popped out. I was right there. But oddly enough, I popped back into time when she was seeing it. I was not getting a live feed. It was like, okay, we're going to let you look at the remote that, you know, from a few days past. Oh, okay. You know, so I'm looking at it. And if you remember the picture, I've got the same perception that she had on it. And so I'm going like, okay, so I'm remembering the picture that was in my head. Big deal, right? And yeah. I said, if I'm really remote, because, I mean, we can fool ourselves. You know, you got to be aware of fooling yourself. So I'm going like, oh, well, if I'm in a remote, then I can go around it and look at it from all sides, right? So mm-hmm. I start to move to the right towards these fuzzy areas that are sort of to the right of the picture. You've got the spacecraft all between that fuzziness and the sun. Okay. So I tried to go around this, and as I started to do it, I went, oh, I don't think I want to do that, because I suddenly realized that these clouds, she was calling, or somebody was calling him, one of the guys doing some analysis on this, said that it was, she said somebody had told her that these were frequency bands. Now, that's all she said when she was doing the live presentation of what the photographs that she had just taken. And I think her name is Ginger. And she's just the loveliest lady. But so they had she had the pictures of it. But I think this fuzziness, this what they call the frequency thing, it's like a vortexy thing. And I think they were coming out of that. I think what she caught was the image of the 3D field of interstellar wormholes or whatever they are. But this entire fleet had sort of like just popped out of this energy mm-hmm. field.
Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, but I still couldn't go around. And I'm trying to think of what it was. I didn't really, all I was doing was verifying what she saw that day. So I still don't have a live feed on what's happening up there. But what I found just absolutely, do you have comments, either of you? Derek, what do you know about what we've just talked about?
I've have my opinions and thoughts and whatnot. And when I, look at it intuitively like anybody else can, it's whole frequency bands, whatnot, like you were saying. So that's, I think it's basically the sun is sending those bursts of frequency and or energy, however you want to term it. And there's others involved between us and that are trying to either dampen or control whether some of us receive these frequencies. And I don't know, I'm being vague there for a reason, because I'm kind of structuring that for a lot of people, but it looks like a whole many, people involved there trying to maybe limit and or just structure the frequencies that are coming out of some at that time. And possibly those little squigglies that we're kind of talking about, that what we're referred to kind of look like bees, and others say spaceships and lots of names. And I don't know, but maybe those are visible only in those frequency bands. So maybe they didn't come from anywhere. And again, I have no idea, but maybe they're visible only in that frequency or area, and maybe not further out. So maybe they've been there, and we just didn't see them until these new frequencies were emitted from the sun. Just an idea.
Or it was a holographic imaging. She took a picture of it. But I don't think so. I think that what happened was come on. If you see it, it's because they want you to see it.
I agree with you.
You know what I'm saying? So... All right. So, what's the message here? What are we looking at? What is the message? I told you at the time. I said my feeling is that the sun is technically unstable right now. Now, it's unstable to the people looking at it because they haven't gone through what's about to happen. So it's unstable to them, but in the scheme of the cosmic universe, no, it's just going through what it goes through. It's a phasing thing. Everything is pulse phase. And so it's a natural occurrence. We've gone through it many, many times. And we're still here. So don't panic. Don't panic. But it seems like every time, and what am I talking about? Well, we're in that proton belt, which is the energy that, as a matter of fact, you explain it, Walt, because you do a better job of that than I do. Explain the proton belt and the carbon, fields of carbon that are in it.
You mean photon belt?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of a proton belt.
Oh, did I say proton, photon? I'm sorry.
Well, what my awareness of from what I read on that is, it's like, what do you say? It's like a beam of energy emitting from the center of the galaxy. And it's if you can imagine a beam of light coming out of a lighthouse, and you can see how the beam extends out into the ocean to create a point of reference for ships. So it's like that. It's a gigantic beam of energy emitting from the center of the galaxy. The entire solar system is traveling the width of this beam. And because of the amount of energy that's in this so-called environment out in space, it affects everything else. So everything is raising in vibration. Solid matter is raising in vibration. Therefore, time perception, time duration gets affected, and consciousness gets affected. So this is the thing that the Cabal have been fighting for years to delay as much as possible, stop it if they can, delay it as much as possible, that it's affecting human consciousness. It cannot avoid being affected because it's raising vibration. I mean, I've said before in other shows, back in 2004, Dr. Costa was warning everyone that either you clean up all your baggage that you had, that you've been carrying from all these lives. That's why he was going around teaching this 15-step process, or you're going to have to leave the body because all that old garbage is incompatible with where the Earth is going now. And if you reference the Ra material, the Law of One books, the entity Ra that was speaking through the body of Carla Ruchert said that this particular, they don't use the word ascension. A lot of people, unfortunately, like everything, things get abused, word usage gets abused, and then things mean whatever the talker wants to mean. They've been banding the word around ascension back and forth, and people say it's different things. Oh, it's the, what do you call it? It's the rapture. No, it's not that. It's this, it's that. Forget that. In the Law of One material, Ra uses the term harvest, which is when the planet reaches a certain level of vibration, souls move on to a higher realm of existence. And Jim Self, the man who goes around teaching the principles of energy alchemy, he talks about something similar. He says in the fifth dimension, a tree looks like a tree. He says, but what's different is the energies of that environment. He says, for example, if a person has no compassion, no love, no empathy, that person is living smack in the third dimension. Because the lack of those things is, you know, people that are living in a state of me, 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 and just survival. That's third dimension. Because higher emotions, higher energy requires a higher dimensional domain in order to exist, like anything. So he says if a person is very compassionate, they are capable of unconditional love and understanding, feeling for others, appreciation. He says that person is living in the fourth dimension because those are fourth dimensional attributes. So he referred to the dimensions as that state of energy. He never said, oh, the fifth dimension is you're floating in a cloud and you see the angels zipping by with their harps. No, that wasn't the fifth dimension at all. So going back to the Ra material, what the Ra material was very specific about is that in all the other times, the Earth has had to do this leap of frequency, moving into a higher energy area of space, is when the geologists and biologists have said that the Earth has gone through these mass extinctions. In the millions of years of its existence, every so often there is a cycle and the planet experiences a mass extinction. You know, most life forms just disappear. Well, yeah, Ra says that this is the very first time in recorded galactic history that a planet is doing this with all its population intact. It wants the people to go with it where it's going. It doesn't want to extinguish life. It doesn't want massive die-off. So that's why so much of the Galactic Federation is present to witness this. In their recorded history, nothing like that has ever happened. For a planet to make the dimensional leap, the energy density leap, it sheds most of its biosphere because the biosphere can't take it. But this is not the case now. It's so completely different. So sorry if I got off track.
No, you were dead on. You were dead on. Because what's happening is, and I can feel it. I mean, I've been watching this happen in my own body. As we got into the different frequencies, as we're moving into the different frequencies, which is, it's fields of energy that are the building blocks of cosmic building blocks. Just think of it that way. So if you're prepared and you find yourself in that environment, then you can use all of those building blocks in order to make a substantial leap in, it's different. We call it higher, but it's different. It's, and the difference is that it's more expansive. You know, you're able to kind of like, okay, I'm kind of hemmed in here now. I've outgrown this environment. I need to change. So the universe says, oh, well, we got this time frame where we change everything. And that's where we find ourselves now. In the constrict of where we're at, the energies are feeding the sun a tremendous amount of fuel. So the sun heats up. We've done this many, many times. I've told the story. The sun heats up. It turns into a white star, a white look to it because it's burning so hot. But then it flares out, boo, just like a fire, you know, you got in your backyard.
Well, but don't forget that color denotes frequency. Blue light has a higher frequency than orange light, and that's exactly what the sun is doing. It is changing frequency. I mean, for the longest time, we were aware that we had a yellow sun, correct? You know, that's what they would teach children in school.
Well, that's what you saw when you looked at the sky. It was yellow.
Exactly. That's over and done with. No, nobody's saying it in schools, but the sun is white. It's radiant white. So that right there is a change of frequency. It is existing. It is vibrating at a higher frequency than before. And that's because of where it is in space.
And that white sun came into play in 2012 because it was 2013, early in 2013, that it's that cognizant dissonance that we have in our head, right? So I'm driving home from work, and I go the same route every day, and I'm driving into the setting sun. And it's an orange sun, orange yellow sun, no, same sun I've looked at for 70 years, not a problem here. I take the entrance onto the highway, and the highway goes now south to north. That's where I'm traveling, south to north. Then there's like a 90-degree turn. So now I'm going east, and west is behind me. And when that happened, all of a sudden I notice a flash of light in the side mirror. And I'm going like, what is that? And all of a sudden I went, oh my God, that's the sun. And it was bright white because I had been introduced to a new way of looking at the sun through a mirror. And that's when I could see that it was white. They had showed me the cognitive dissonance. It was like I was blinded. So yeah, most people didn't realize that it had happened way before they ever noticed it because it was like the thing, you know, where the chips come in and the Native Americans can't see them because it's not within their reality. And it was the reflection in the water that the shamans pointed to that allowed them to see it. You remember that story? It's the same story. So it was a white sun for quite a long time before people started to understand it. Now, I had written about it in 2013, you know, that the sun's going to turn white here. You know, this is just a fact of life. So to me, it was like an easy turnaround. I already psychologically knew that this was going to happen. And so when I saw it, I went, oh, okay, it happened. I just didn't see it, right? But most people, I didn't even see it. But more and more people began to perceive it. So as that happened, then more and more people began to perceive it. And it was the funniest thing. I get a call out on Facebook and I go to wherever the chat thing was going, and it was this poor man that had gone out to the beach, and he sees a white sun. You know, whatever triggered him to have the cognizant dissonant fade and he could see it, I don't know. But there was more than one person that called me into the discussion because they know I'm the only person that they knew that could explain it to him, right? And so I get on there and I said, blah, 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 you know how I can do. And the guy said, oh, thank you so much. It was like, I thought I was crazy. No, 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 you just saw it before others did. And because he posted that, then who knows how many people saw that posting, and all of a sudden they go out. How many people have I said, go on out there, go look at the sun right now and see if it's white or not? You know? I said, but make sure you don't look at it long because you're going to have a, it's going to burn your eyes out. So anyway, that's what's happening, and it's just like you're talking about. Every time you have something like this happening, the energies all around us are changing. And because they're changing, those people that are not locked into the 3D by all of the chains that are there to hold us as enslaved to the 3D, not let you see what's really happening, they're keeping people from understanding it and seeing it. But sooner or later, this is, you're not going to be able to hide this thing. I think that because every time that we have this situation and there's a flash, okay, what's going to happen is that the sun is going to go out. It's going to look like it's, you're not going to see, it's going to be just gone. All right, because it's going into the dark state, which is actually smoldering, which is actually the hottest part of the hottest that you get this sun. And then it's going to flare back awake. And it's probably going to take 3 days. Because 3 days of darkness is written about in virtually every society worldwide the last time it happened. Well, it happened at the 13,000 mark. See, it's like you get on the other side, the opposite side of the galaxy, and you're going to have a similar situation occurring at 13 versus the 27, 26 plus. And so it's because of the black hole in the center of the galaxy. You know, that is they think it all sucks in. Well, it's sucking in, but it's also blowing out. You're taking in 3D energy, and then it's called a blowout. It sends out other energies that are not being sucked in; they're being sent out, and that's what we're getting hit with. So it's coming from the very center of our cosmic, you know, local existence, which is the galaxy. That's all we're doing, is going around the galaxy. The sun has gotten bigger because it got hotter, it expanded. That forced the rest of the solar system to expand with it, because the rules, cosmic rules, indicate that you have to have a geometric form so that you can contain the energies. And so if you change one aspect of the geometric relationship, you have to change it all. And that's why in 2012, the Inuit Eskimo people were getting television, it wasn't mainstream, it was local television, to hear their stories about how the sun and the moon were in a different place. Because they were getting lost in the white out of the Alaska, that area, and in the snow. And so there was all this commotion, and there were people saying the same thing. You know, oh, God, the sun is rising in the wrong place. I noticed it. I noticed that there was something odd in the moon. The position, I'm going like, I don't remember the moon being in that position before. But what am I going to do about it? You know, and I'm going, well, why don't these astronomers know? I mean, they're supposed to know this stuff. Well, it's because, again, the cognizant dissonance sometimes sets in. But also, all of this is happening, and it's kind of difficult to see what's happening when you're part of the happening. You know what I'm saying, Walt?
Yeah, you're inside the picture, not outside of it.
You're inside the picture. Right, right, exactly. Now more and more people are talking about that the moon's not even in the right position. So who knows what is about to happen? But I have no angst about it. You know, I'm looking at this picture that shows, you know, maybe 300 or 400 seemingly spacecraft. And I'm going like, huh, Isn't that interesting? No, no excitement, no angst, just, isn't that interesting? So I think that those of us that were sent here to stabilize the energies, we know so much about what's happening just under, in the, our subconscious. We know. You know what I'm saying? Do you get that feeling, Walt, that you may not be able, you may not know it just this second, but somewhere inside you, you know that there's a plan that's unraveling? I mean, not
well,
unraveling,
but
enacting. Well,
man is the only creature that has access to all the knowledge in the universe. It's the only block is that you don't believe it or that you doubt it. That's why it's so silly to ask outside of you, look inside. You have the access to all the knowledge in the universe. The problem is that you don't believe. You, in that genetic program of giving your power away, you stop yourself from accessing all that knowing, and you go looking for authorities outside of you. You know, scientists, presenters, spiritual gurus, because they know, I don't know anything. And that's a program. It's not true. It's you created that part of the reality that you created for yourself. Oh, I don't know anything. I never went to university. So man, the truth remains. Man is the one creature with access to all the knowledge in the universe. Just let yourself access it. I mean, I have written these words so many times in writing letters to people that write me asking about dowsing. And I keep getting the same thing, is that the majority of them believe that dowsing is something you do with your head. And I keep explaining, no, quite the opposite. You have to get out of your head if you're going to be a successful dowser. You douse with your body. All your body cells are open and awake and connected to intelligent infinity. So your body is accessing all the knowing in the universe. It's the mind that has to get the heck out of the way in order to let the body do its thing. That's why if you're in a very excited emotional state, you shouldn't be dowsing because your mind is getting into the fray. It's interfering with everything you're doing. You should be, you know, I have my own personal tricks for getting the mind. Here's a rattle. Leave me the fuck alone so I can do my dowsing. Here, look at this. You know, like distracting a baby with some toy, so that I can really do my work. Otherwise, I will not trust. If the mind is going to get involved, then I won't trust my dowsing. Very few people get it. You're dowsing with your body because you've been given the most perfect, most exquisite instrument in the whole of creation, and it has access to all that knowing. But people choose not to believe because they've been programmed otherwise, you know, from the earliest youth. You have to ask the teachers, and you have to ask the parents, and you have to ask the police, and you have to ask the, you know, anybody but you.
Derek, am I remembering right that you also know about the Law of One series?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. I've actually read it a couple times.
So what are they saying about this time frame? I mean, what's their... Can you give us some insight? But either one of you, because both of you, I have had such a strange thing with that information. I have attempted numerous times to read it, and every time I get nauseous, which is my indication, don't do it. So I don't know.
I know why you get nauseous.
Why?
Well, this has been explained many times, and Derek will be able to give you his side of his insight on the information I'm going to give you, but I'm convinced this is what's affecting you. You see, the lady, Carla Ruckert, she was a devout Lutheran. I believe the Lutherans are the metaphysical type of Christians. So even though Ra is speaking through her body, because what she did was not by any textbook channeling. When there are people that do channeling, they're awake and aware in their bodies, and they're translating into words the information that they're perceiving. Case in point, this lady, who does Esther, the lady who channels Abraham, for example. You know, she's awake and aware, standing in front of an audience, and she's relaying what Abraham is saying to her. And even she has apologized, because if she feels bad for whatever reason, or is worried about something, or is in an excited emotional state, it will affect the accuracy of what she's relaying. So there's been a couple of presentations where she's apologized that what she relayed was not, they should ignore it because of whatever reason. In the case of Carla Rucker Clark, she was not channeling at all. She was literally exiting her body, and Ra was using the body vehicle to communicate. Don Elkins and Jim McCarty, who are present there, are recording this, and they had to use three tape recording machines because invariably one of them would burn out. So they had to make sure that they had copies of what was being said. So what happens is, Ra has no other choice but to use the mind that's connected to the body, you know, like a translator at the United Nations, when you have these instant translators, you know, someone is saying something in Russian and then you, different translators are translating it into the different languages. Same thing. Ra can only do can only relay the information given the limitations of Carla's mind. Carla was not trained in any technical field. She was not a scientist. Don Elkins was a scientist and an engineer and a private pilot. So he was highly technical. Carla did not have the necessary scientific vocabulary in her mind to answer a lot of the questions that he was posing to Ra. So what happens is a lot of what Ra expressed, unfortunately, was being filtered through her Christian mindset. So that's why it's even Wilcock has spoken about this, that the law of Ra has a ton of information. It is good, but it's not complete or absolute because it has suffered in the translation. And I think you, at some level, you perceive that distortion, and that's why it kind of makes you nauseous, because you're not like that at all. I mean, you're not a religious fanatic by any definition of the words. At least I think you aren't.
No, not at all. Yeah, what I got was that I knew the information. You know, don't get bogged down trying to read this stuff because you know the information. Now, yeah. There's other places where I was like, I don't want to read this. Don't make me do this, you know. Like the Keys of Enoch. That was one of the most convoluted books I've ever read in my life. And it wasn't like, oh, yeah, look at it, read it. No, it was like, study it. I actually went to classes listening to other people trying to explain it.
And you came out intact, because I've known of cases of people that end up getting entities in them because of reading that stuff.
What, the Keys of Enoch?
Yeah. I don't know if they had this inclination prior to reading the book, but I remember Frank Jordan, who had the Healings and Meditation show. I don't know if he's still doing that. But on Saturdays, when they would do the healing requests, you know, people send in through the chat a request for healing for X or Y, Z, you know, different people. One of the people one time in one show was someone who was battling, this person had entities in their body, and it was a result of reading that book, after reading that book.
Okay, I just got a download on that. The book itself is a textbook.
Yeah, correct. But
there's no reason that it's not ceremonial magic. It's not any of that. I mean, that's profoundly.
It's just prose.
It's just prose. It's profoundly within the context. If you understand it all, you will understand it all. But what happened was that, like a lot of other books, people would go to it for the wrong reason. You know, they're going to it for a way of going through life instead of thinking of it as a textbook. It's just giving you certain presentation of the scheme of things, from history to sound healing. I mean, this was where sound healing was being really presented in a scientific way. Hertak himself ended up talking to a lot of scientists, because what he put down there, which he didn't necessarily all understand, was later on, remember this thing was published in 72, so later on, quantum physics began to get really a hold on a lot of scientific modalities influencing it, and that's what started people listening to him from the scientific community. But the book itself is really just a textbook, but it's very convoluted because it's trying to teach you many layers of reality. I mean, they go into the family relationships. I mean, I'm talking like the Adam Cadman, you know, we're the Adam Cadman. Who's the Adam Cadman? We are. What are we? What's that? You know, I mean, it's like, it's so deep that it's very difficult to understand. So even though I studied it, I can say that, I still don't understand it, but because it was dealing, it's like a lot of these things are like keys. They unlock your brain, you know, and it's frequencies. When you're reading this, the words, the letters, everything, it's frequencies. You're trying to read the words to make sense of what the words are saying, but in reality, you're being fed tremendous amount of information that you're not even aware of because it's coming in as basically holographic imaging through frequency in your brain. If your brain is balanced, okay, because what the problem is that they have tried to keep us from understanding our creative, esoteric thinking, right side of our brain. Now we're talking brain, we're not talking consciousness, we're talking about the biological organ that is able to hold these energies. And so when you're in that state of only being in the left side, the frequencies don't allow you to see this other part of reality. So you really have to work to have a balanced mind, is what it is. And if you're in that balanced mind, poof, you know, you can see how clear, it becomes clear to you that there is a 3D energy field, and then there's this other energy field. And that's what we're being led to understand, to see. They're just upgrading our physical energy bodies to be able to handle the new level of energy that, if we're prepared, results in a consciousness expansion. If you're not prepared, you're going to basically
die.
You're going to die. But you're not going to die painfully. It'll just be because the molecular configuration of your body is not going to be able to withstand the change in energies. You know, it's like walking into a radiation field that's just tears the body apart. But remember, I was given the opportunity to come here and play this game, and I was told everybody would be saved. So everybody can be saved, and this is the difference. Walt, as you were pointing to or referencing prior to this, we go through this all the time. Oh, let's start over again. And it's not starting over again. It's like, okay, I won that version of the game. Now let me try another one. This is the creator consciousness Gaia that's the biosphere. Okay? So she just wipes the slate clean, right? Well, she was making a technical error in the game playing. Because you don't want to just start over again. You want to build on what you just built on. Now, she was doing a fine job of it until she got to humanity. But I think humanity gets into doing such awful stuff that she kind of gets pissed off. I'm starting again. You know? But as the Anastasi said, something happened this time that made the change. Enough of us became aware of Gaia, made the connection to her. You know, so that there's now an emotional, compassionate, we're in this together thing. So now, I think, because she's going through the consciousness changes too. So now we're working at it as human beings working with Gaia, so Gaia can go bigger, so that we can go bigger. And I think that that's the difference. And what changed it, Walt? I'm still not sure. But Anastasi was very specific that it was 2000. In the year 2000, something happened that changed the scenario.
A collective choice, because one of the things is, and I believe the collective choice is the same, exactly the same thing that Inelia describes, that the reason the cabal is failing miserably is because at the collective level, humanity says, no, we're not going to be extinguished. We're not going to be exterminated. Because remember, that was on the books. The extermination of mankind down to a manageable level so that they could keep, you know, full control on their slaves from whatever the population is down to 500 million. That was part of their plan. Well, that's, you know, the collective says, no, we're not going with that. And the universe is based on contracts. If you don't agree to something, it cannot happen. It's that simple, and people don't get it. It's all based on contracts. Things affect you, things kill you, because you have an agreement with that. And the whole craziness of this thing is that people don't realize how easy you create contracts in an instant. Somebody comes at you and they infuse you with fear. Well, you just made a contract because you just established, yes, I believe that you can hurt me, therefore you will. And if you say, I withdraw my consent from this experience, there's nothing you can do. You've experienced it. Remember that guy that wanted to visit me no matter what? You read the letter that I wrote to him. I completely withdrew all consent to having any form of contact with him or his cronies. He disappeared from my reality.
Yeah, he disappeared from all of our realities.
Yes.
You know, we're being really rude to our guest, Derek, because it's... we started a little late. Okay, all right. We started a little late. Derek, you want to join us?
Oh, you're not being rude at all. It's fascinating. I'm learning. I have a comment on when you're talking about the various books and Law of One and whatnot. I from my perspective, it's not so much that the book does anything, or any of these other books, any of the multitude of Bibles out there, but it's more of it changes your perspective, and that's what's going to change. So when they talk about the Law of One we're talking about, the harvesting, this, that, or the other, instantly most people think, well, oh, that means all the enlightened, I'm doing some air quotes here, are going to jump on these spaceships and maybe go here to New Earth. There's lots of scenarios there. But from my perspective, it's more just that. It's a harvesting. It's a perspective change. Nobody's necessarily going anywhere. People aren't going to disappear. They're not going to fall apart because their frequency is not compatible with the new frequencies coming in. No, maybe it's something more like these frequencies they're sending. A lot of us have maybe standard AM radio, but they're sending FM signals. Well, these books help you understand there's such a thing as FM and will help you turn on your FM, you know, receiver. So then you're open to these frequencies. So, but it doesn't necessarily mean if you just get in the AM frequencies in this analogy that you're not necessarily going to be, you know, saved, protected, harvested, or any of these other terms. Again, in my perspective, it's all an understanding and perspective. So another way of putting it is maybe another sense coming. So if you didn't have, let's say you were born without a sense of smell, well, you know, you're going to smell things when you walk in a room where others won't. And, you know, how do you explain that to them? You really can't. It's difficult. So there's other senses, be it intuition or just various cognitive insights and energy sensitivities, but those are what I think made change for those that request it and want it. So that'd just be a little input I had on that.
Well, that's kind of boring. You know, it's like, come on, Derek, it can be much more exciting than that. We can have spacecraft coming into the sun to put a damper on it so that we've got time to get to whatever level we have to get to so that the entire
The
entire human species can have an awakening. See, I'm believing that a human species can have a massive awakening. And every single person that's a human being will go, holy moly mama. Because I
agree, it's a different level.
Mm-hmm. It's a different level, and I think that it gets much more complicated because I believe also that this is not just a one-dimension event. I believe that, well, we got into it earlier today. See, I love Julie Roberts because she says things to me that cause me to ask a question that gives me a download. She kind of like opens up other questions to me that, you know, she just does it, and I get these downloads. And it's sort of like every dimension has its own vibratory environment, but it's an energy field, and energy fields fluctuate. The different frequencies and the parameters of a frequency is very often based on frequency. Well, it's based on frequency, but it's also based on what the heck the field is doing. Is it going up and down like a sine wave thing, or is it coming at you in this massive square wave? There's many different complex and changed the ability to change a given field if you add energies to it, because the energies are spinning in different directions and all of this. The only thing we have to do is allow it to happen, because you're not going to stop it. But if you just relax and just let it happen.
It's the resistance that kills you.
Exactly. It's the resistance that kills you. Good point.
It's like when you stand on the beach and you're trying to hold fast against a wave, it just throws you all over the place. But if you're on a board riding it, you're just going along for the ride.
And I think
people don't realize how much of life they resist daily. The resistance to change, for example, that's damaging to you, resisting change, because you're resisting something that's just normal.
Go with the flow.
Go with the flow.
Now,
so you want me to read the rest of the report after the break?
Yeah, we can take the break. It's like, I'm not exactly sure if we're... Wait a minute, I can look at it. We got 3 minutes before the halfway mark. What I find exciting is that if you stand back and you look at all of the indicators, we have a massive amount of the prophecies of different peoples come together. The science is coming together. It's just like everything is prepping itself for some massive whoosh change. And yet...
But consciousness keeps changing it.
Yes.
That's the part that it's difficult to get across people that are like prophecy junkies. The more people that know about it, it's not going to be the way it was written down.
That's
why the church would keep them secret.
You can't predict the future. You can only create it. You know, so it's like we've got all these versions of what might or might not happen. And if we keep trying to control the story, we're going to muck the story up. Just let it go. Because we're not capable, I don't think we're capable as a species today, to be able to perceive the reality of tomorrow. Because of cognizant dissonance. We haven't gone there. It's not part of anybody's, anywhere in the galaxy, and local galaxy, and all the dimensions that are seemingly attached to this thing. We're in for an interesting ride, and it's not going to be bumpy. You know, don't be fearful of it. Just, you know, gets a little rocky, you just hang on to the side of the boat. What's the boat? The human, the emotion that ties us all together is humanity. Yes, there are people out there that are sociopaths and psychopaths. Those aren't us. For all I know, they don't even exist. That we created them ourselves. Because they're just too awful. I don't want them to be part of our family. Oh, Lordy. Okay, so I'm going to put on... Oh, gosh, I never even figured out... Oh, okay, we'll do Fly Like an Eagle just because it's there. And we'll be back just under 5 minutes. Thank you all for listening with us. And I hope you're having as much fun as I am. So Here we go. Welcome back to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show. It's September 18, 2018. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Walt Silva and Derek Condit. We've been talking about the Law of One and the Sun and solar closings. anybody want to say anything about what we talked about in the first hour?
No, I'm ready to finish reading the report. It's up to you if you want to discuss something.
Okay, yeah. Unless, Derek, you got anything?
No, I'm good. I'd like to hear the rest of the report from Walt.
Okay, go for it, Walt.
Okay, so we left. When last we left our heroes, he was talking about the closure of the observatories. So he continues, the MI6 source said the observatories were shut down because they wanted to carry out a more orderly disclosure process in order not to cause panic or misunderstanding among the surface population. In any case, this may be related to a huge surge in UFO sightings around the planet recently. Below are links to two examples reported in traditional media outlets. One of those examples has photos of two UFOs over the White House. There has also been an unprecedented increase in tropical storm activity coming that may be related to the unusual solar activity. Last week, the entire region of the tropics was covered in belt of storms, seven of which were big enough to be named. It is very interesting that, for the first time, the Swiss bankers in Zurich have decided to send an emissary to meet the White Dragon Society. Vincenzo Mazzara and Leo Zagami of the P2 Freemason Lodge previously told this writer that they took orders from aliens based in Switzerland, headed by an entity known as the Black Sun. The Swiss representative acknowledged that their leadership has been taking orders from the Black Sun and that it communicated with them through gamma rays. At this point, readers who are accustomed to this report sticking to real-world issues are probably shaking their heads and wondering if somebody got to us. The answer is that the forensic trail followed from primary sources like David Rockefeller, the Rothschilds, the British royal family, Asian secret societies, etc., all pointed to some sort of control grid on this planet that is headquartered in Switzerland. It may well be that all this woo-woo space stuff is just smoke and mirrors designed to hide a small cabal of old men. In parentheses, several sources say they are the elders of Zion. From the prying eyes of the slave population they have been ruling over for so long. So, returning to strictly here and now Earth issues, we can report that representatives from banking families in Zurich, MI6, that is, the British royal family, the Pentagon, the CIA, the Asian secret societies, and the Russian FSB, all told the White Dragon Society that they support staging a massive multi-trillion dollar campaign to end poverty and stop environmental destruction. To make this possible, though, the cabal has to be completely removed from power. So let us get back to the latest developments on that front. In the U.S., the takedown of CVS chief Les Moonves may have spooked the Zionist, as his great-uncle was Israel's first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, Pentagon sources note. Ben-Gurion has been fingered by newly declassified documents as the person who ordered the assassination of John Kennedy, so maybe now CBS will report this to the remaining audience who still believe in the corporate media. I'm going to pause at this point in case Nancy wants to add, because she's an expert on the subject. Do you want to add something to that statement?
No, I've never... To be honest with you, every time this question of the Zionist aspects of reality come up, I run in the other direction.
I thought you were going to say something about the assassination of John, because that's the part that you have been studying forever.
I understood that. No, but I don't see the connection. It forced me to look at... of course, and today there is a tremendously tapestry of Zionist, and we're not talking Jewish, we're talking Zionist. Zionist weaving in through the cabal and everything. I mean, that you can't get away from that. But I had never really considered it going as far back as basically the establishment of Israel itself. And so you threw me into a walk. Oh wow! Never looked at that. So I can't really comment on it except to say that it does make sense that there was, but to put it in those terms, that's pretty interesting.
Okay, so I'll go on. Furthermore, the sources continue: the Trump executive order to sanction foreign election interference is targeting Israel more than Russia or the UK. Because Israel interferes in the U.S. elections. The Pentagon is upset with Israeli with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for openly backing Mitt Romney in 2012 and Hillary Clinton in 2016. The interference, they say, takes place via financier cutouts like Haim Saban for the Democrats and Sheldon Adelson for the GOP. Furthermore, the sources say Hollywood / Wall Street / Silicon Valley Fifth Column fundraising has also been supporting shills in Congress like Senators Tom Cotton, Chuck Schumer, and John McCain. In addition, the Trump trade war with China has the benefit of weakening Wall Street, since any bank or banker like Jamie Dimon, who lobbies for China, may be prosecuted for being an unregistered foreign agent or worse, the sources warn. The MI6 people, for their part, think their worst enemy is the European Union and the black nobility that owns it. They say German Chancellor Angela Merkel should be made to pay compensation to countries like Poland and Hungary for what her bloodline, Hitler et al., did to them. It is very interesting in this context, then, to hear that the Russian FSB has been negotiating recently with the Knights of Malta, who are in many ways the military arm of the P2 Freemason nexus that controls the European Union. We are assuming they are looking for protection against the impending Anglo-Saxon quest for justice. The other people the FSB has recently been doing work for are the Saudi royals. The FSB source would not say exactly what they did recently for the Saudis, other than to note that it was intense and involved over 100 agents. Since the Russian Orthodox Church has previously declared a holy war against radical Islam, the following article discussing plans to execute senior Wahhab clerics may be related. The other probably related event has been that Russian Orthodox Church is having a schism with the Orthodox Church in Muslim-occupied Constantinople over its support of the Nazi-occupied regime in the Ukraine. Remember, the Russians have been rivals to the Ottoman Turks and the Germans for centuries. Also, the Nazis were responsible for creating the Muslim Brotherhood and radical Islam as a way of undermining Anglo/French rule of the Middle East, according to MI6 and CIA sources. You're going to love this part. Remember the report of an earthquake in Hokkaido, Japan, the island north of Japan?
Yes.
Okay, listen to this. Something is also happening in Japan that could lead to regime change. It turns out that Japan's government was pumping carbon dioxide into the ground near the epicenter of the recent devastating earthquake in Hokkaido. And he shows here the link where you can read it. In other words, a slave government operating within the unscientific Khazarian mafia, in quotes, carbon dioxide causes global warming paradigm, triggered an earthquake by injecting 150,000 tons of carbon into the ground. This is all over the Japanese internet, but of course, the corporate media remains silent. Nonetheless, stupid moves like this are contributing to the emerging consensus among right-wing power brokers that the Bank of Japan needs to be nationalized. This would remove a major source of funding for the Khazarian mafia. This would also mean an automatic end to their slave regime in Japan. As the Khazarian mafia loses power around the world, it is urgent that the various rebel factions fighting for planetary liberation start making concrete plans for a smooth transition. The WS, that's the White Dragon Society, believes such a transition will require the announcement of a jubilee, followed by a massive campaign to fix the planet. Also, while the White Dragon Society supports a South African-style Truth and Reconciliation Committee, it looks like many of the Khazarian mafia crimes have been so horrific that war crime tribunals are inevitable. Let us see what October brings. Closing period. There you have it. You heard it here in Cosmic Reality.
Yeah, things they are really, I mean, we're just in very interesting times. which I think is a Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Yeah.
But we don't have to think of it as a curse. We can think of it as an opportunity to have a lot of fun. I got to tell you guys a story, because you both were intricately involved in it. Do you remember our friend Janet that had the problem with the tenant of 7 acres of hers who was growing hay, putting Roundup on the field?
Oh, she called me today, actually, so I'll be interested.
Oh, okay. What did she say today?
Oh, no. Well, I want to hear. You should probably go over yours first, and I'll fill in if there's anything added.
Oh, okay. So Janet had heard us on radio talking about shungite, but she didn't buy it from Cosmic Reality. She went to a local vendor and got shungite and had been passing it on to other people, and so she had a supply of it. When she discovers that this new renter had actually put Roundup all over the 7 acres of what was supposed to be pristine soil with, you know, only for hay. So she went into a complete meltdown in that she, I think that she probably even, because she's very, very metaphysical and a light worker, and I suppose she was, you know, like I would be, you know, why did you do this? I've worked so hard to keep the land pure, and why did you let this happen type of thing? So there was a lot of, you know, real angst into what was happening. Now, what, Derek, I don't know if she told you this, she may have, but what she did, Walt, was she went, I think I told you, was she went to the middle of the 7 acres, and she dropped nuggets in the middle, and then she walked the entire the boundary of the 7 acres and dropped nuggets as she went. Then she contacts us, she put it in the B category on the contact page, and I thought it was on B, so I sent it to Derek. And Derek gets it and talks to her, and she's asking him, do you think that shungite can clear this? Now, she had done exactly what she should have done, or what I would have advised, is to do walk around just dropping what you've got of the shungite. And as she's doing it, she's making the intention of the land going pure, in which we know is going to be enhanced by the shungite field. If you hear all that panting in the background, it's the dog. He apparently is detecting a wild critter in my yard. I can't imagine what it is. But the idea here is that she had set up the beginning of a thought form. When she talks to you and she says, will shungite do this? You, Derek, said, well, yes. But as you said yes, you formulated, whether you were aware of it or not, a thought form of, yes, of course it can, and you saw that land pure too. So then you asked me to talk to her, so I called her up. And so she's telling me the whole story, because I'd only gotten bits and pieces of it, really, from you. And she's telling me the whole story. And so I start looking at the land, and I'm going, like, I think it's pure, Janet. I think you've already done it, you and Derek. And so I sent her, I said, I wish we could take a chemical analysis of it, but we can't afford that sort of thing. So get somebody to help you muscle test on the land and determine what works and what doesn't work. Meanwhile, I talked to Walt, and he has devices that could have done this, but at this point, I didn't even think there was a problem. So she did. She found somebody. They went back out there, and the muscle testing said the land was pure. But by now, she's taken it even further. I love our friends that, you know, are in this shungite with us. Now she's thinking about, she's focused on the chemicals. She's thinking about the fact that above her is a farmland that's probably being sprayed with all sorts of stuff. And the stream that is going through her property has also gone through there. So she figures, oh gosh, the stream must be just awful. So she goes down and she takes two vials from the stream. And in one of those vials, she put three nuggets of shungite. And the other one, she really listened to her. She said, well, she said, and I didn't even get them next to each other. Even in the car, I kept them in different areas of the car. So, you know, because we know that, you know, one field will affect another, whether it's got the shungite in it or not. You just have to put it in the shungite field. But she was very careful about it. So she gets the muscle tester to, you know, say that the, you know, they test out and the land's good. And she said, now I want you to do something else. And she had her test the shungite watered one, and of course it came out and it said, no, that was pure, you could drink that water, not a problem. But from the same spring, without the shungite, she got, no, this is really nasty, this is toxic. So then Janet says to her, okay, so she says, get ready to do some muscle testing. And she takes the three nuggets out of the water, you know, the good water, and she drops it into the vial that's got the bad water. And she immediately says to the friend, muscle test right now. And the woman probably was a little stunned because why would, you just did it. You just dropped, no, right now. Because Janet heard me say that it's instantaneous. So they muscle tested right away, and it was absolutely pure, instantaneously. So I wanted to share that with you guys, you know, that people are listening. Well,
yeah, Derek is people are so used to material processes, they completely leave out the energetic component. And shungite is working at the energy. Remember what we've said in the past? Creation comes from the top down. It doesn't go from the bottom up. It's the shungite is affecting the energetic structure of the water itself, not so much the material. That's why they waste so much shungite, because they believe, you know, the people that believe you have to change it every so often.
And you because. have to use tons of it in a glass of water. No, all you need is work the energy and only use three nuggets. That's all she had. That's all she was working with, three nuggets. So, anyway, Derek, what did she say to you today, hon?
I think you pretty much summed it up. I did want to note that I don't know how much, if she gives herself enough credit, because when she was doing that intent, that like Laura was just alluding to, her saying, I mean, she had a huge impact on it herself with just her own emotions and thoughts and intent. And then the shungite was, of course, you know, an assistance as well. So, but no, Janet had, she had a huge effect on that ground herself. And that was, I agree with you on her pushing that protection zone 10 miles out from her property was a fantastic thing to do. And everybody can do that. And then let's all connect our spots together and make a big grid.
Well, we got the shungite grid up there anyway. So anybody who's out there, mm-hmm. who's hearing us, you don't need to physically have the shungite in your possession. There is a grid of energy, the shungite grid of energy that's all around you. Just tap into it. Just say, well, where is it? You know, and imagine this massive proto-energy that just starts working with your thoughts to... It sort of accelerates them.
The element that's important that for people to realize is whether you do it yourself or you ask for help, the thing is that someone else can't come in and do it for you, because you have to take responsibility for the place where you live. That's what this lady discovered when she went to Italy, that where she lives, she asks the grid to dissolve the chemtrails, and they dissolve. In 10, 15 minutes, they're all gone. But when she went to Italy and saw the chemtrails, she kept asking the grid and nothing would happen. And then I said to her, of course, you don't live there. You're just visiting. You can't take responsibility for a place where you don't live. The earth is very intelligent. And that's what matters, is that this lady took responsibility for her land. And the land, as you know, is a living sentient being. So it's hearing you, it's hearing everything, your intents, your thoughts, your feelings, and as you can see, it responded quite well. But nobody can do that for you. Happens is, even if you don't know how to do it, you ask for help. But that's okay, because you're taking responsibility for asking for help. It's still you.
You know, when I got this image of her going over to Italy, and it's like, you know, you go into somebody's house and you're trying to tell the dog what to do, and the dog is saying to you, who do you think you are?
Who the heck are you?
Yeah, you know.
You're just visiting.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but that's the
key. And the dog speaks Italian.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, my heavenly day. That's too funny. Actually, the reason that I wanted Derek to come on, because I always love Derek to be on with us, he's fun, but also to talk about the bees and the Wi-Fi. Now, we do this periodically all the time, and to update us on the condition of the Shanghai beehives. So, Derek, you want to just kind of talk wherever it takes you? Maybe not. You muted? What happened?
I am. I'm trying to get my voice back, if you can talk for a minute.
Oh, you've lost your voice and I muted myself. Okay.
I lost my voice, so I'll need a minute.
Oh, not a problem. Get some water down you. Get some honey. Go get some honey. You know, get that honey on your throat here. So I don't know what's going to happen on the 20th. But I do think it is another one of the... the other thing we didn't talk about, Walt. Did you see the picture that has the moon passing in front of the satellite, eclipsing the sun?
That was really funny because the speaker, the person who's describing the video, says that it is commonplace that sometimes when you're doing that, depending on where the moon is on its orbit, it will pass in front of the disk of the sun or at some angle. So that's fairly common. But this time it was comical because it was going back and forth. You know, the moon doesn't go backwards on its orbit. It just goes in one direction. And yet when he plays back the recording, you see this disk moving at an angle across the sun. And then it goes back the way it came. So it's like, not the moon.
I think it was actually two of them. And later on, he found
one was bigger than the other.
Right. Well, no, they were slightly different distance from each other. Okay, I agree there was two sizes, but there were also a distance between them. But the thing of it is that he found an actual film of the moon actually going, you know, doing this thing. And you see the moon and it's moving across the face of the sun. No, this was a flyby right on top of those satellites. They just, you know, like, shoo, they wanted to be seen. I mean, if people, you know, that want the disclosure, it's already happening. And this was like the day before. This could have been the trigger point that made them shut down. Now, what we're talking about is you've got the satellite looking at the sun. And all of a sudden, this circular, black, completely black thing went between the satellite camera and the sun. Right on top of it, I mean, half of the sun disappeared. And then it came back the other way, only taking out about a third of the sun. All right, now, then he goes back the next day to the NASA film, and it turns out that they had taken out that second when it came back. Mm. Thank God he had, and the others had filmed it. You know, because they then went back, NASA took out the second shot. Because, okay, or you can say that it's the moon, but it's just like you say, the moon doesn't turn around and go back the other way. So they left the one that they could say was the moon, so then he came up and he showed, no, it couldn't possibly be the moon. The moon is like a teeny, just a small circle going across the sun. It's not blocking out a half of the sun. So... That was a really interesting video, seeing that. So yeah, I think we're in the midst of disclosure.
I haven't looked. Has Wilcox said anything?
No, not that I saw. He's silent. Mm. When I looked at that, when I was watching that particular film, I felt that the crafts were. They know where those satellites are, but they were flying in front of it to make a point. We're here. You know, it was like disclosure is upon us. Every day they're doing something else, is tweaking, because it's the cognitive dissonance. I think we'll name this a cognizant dissonance show. If you just fly in and say we're here, you know, you're going to have all sorts of panic and all this other stuff. But if you do it in a small, you know, like today I'm going to go fly over New York. I'm going to go over Washington, D.C. We're going to start this thing. And people begin to think about the fact, oh, my goodness, in Washington, D.C., they thought they saw a UFO. By the time the UFO is over them, they go, oh, well, there's that UFO. I think that they're putting it out a little bit at a time in order for people to pay attention. And to
it's a repeat of the poor native indigenous people trying to understand what the hell is a flying wooden boat. It's a replay of that, you know.
Yes.
Let's get these primitives to get used to the idea that this exists. It's not a movie anymore.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things when I was playing the song at the break, I said to myself, I should have been playing 2001 Odyssey song, because that's sort of what we're at now, you know. In the film, right, they have a monolith, they find the monolith, puts out an energy that makes them expand their consciousness. Isn't that the story?
No, that's not the story.
Well, I don't want to go through the whole story, but I'm saying, what do you think it is?
It is significant, because what happens is which is worth reading. The story is based on a novel that he wrote called The Sentinel, where it's a different geometry. It wasn't in the original story. It wasn't a monolith. But the point of the story was that this other intelligent civilization has put this thing on the moon as a marker, like a sensor kind of thing, or an alarm system. So that when mankind reached a point in their evolution that they could travel to the moon, this device would become active and let the other one in orbit. In the movie, they have it in orbit around Jupiter. In the book, it's actually on one of the moons of Saturn. And I think that's significant, because a lot of people are talking about the significance of Saturn, but we're not going to stray from this.
Well, did you hear that there's like all of a sudden 7 new moons in Jupiter?
Oh, no. Well, there must be ships.
Well, yeah, I know that, because it just all of a sudden, it was like, oh, wow. I just remembered seeing that. I don't know where.
So in the story, the reason this device is sitting on the moon, ready to become active when it comes into contact with humanity, is because it's signifying, it's telling this other alien intelligence that man is ready for the next step. And that's exactly what it means, that nobody gets the end, why there's a baby there. Well, what it represents is, again, and it's a rewrite from the book. Bauman is taken through the monolith.
Oh, let's not get into the details, okay. Because we're running.
It's taking humanity into its next evolutionary level. That's what it's trying to tell you. You know, we're waiting for you to wake up. You know, sleeping people. As soon as you wake up, we'll introduce you to this new level of reality. That's what it comes down to.
So I was right. It was a good song, but I didn't think of it until after it started the other one. Derek, are you good now? Have you got your voice back?
Did you get your voice back?
I am. I had just taken a drink of water, and then all of a sudden you were switching to me, and I started trying to drink it quick. Sorry about that. I am back. So I can give you that. I can answer you now the quick update on the bees. I did open up all of the beehives, of the Shanghai beehives, yesterday for a fall inspection. And what I can tell you is I got almost all the way down in all of the hives. And I'll just start with the great news is I saw no signs of any sickness, disease, mites, or anything of any kind. No AFB, which is a fungus, or there could be wax moths in there. There's all sorts of issues we've talked about over the last couple of years that can happen with bees. And there were no signs of any of that. And the numbers were extremely strong inside of the hives. And this is after all of the Shanghai hives split or swarmed and then split, ended up throughout the year. So all of the hives were basically cut in half about a month ago or so. It just kind of depends which one we're talking about in numbers. And then that half of the colony went off into the mountainside nearby, and then they stayed here, and they've been rejuvenating since that time. And there's always a possibility when a beehive swarms and does a split that your hive basically just dissipates and goes away, just a lack of numbers. But we didn't have that issue with any of them. And actually quite the opposite, as I mentioned to Nancy yesterday, I got down in a couple of the beehives and I started seeing queen cells, and the queens were in them at that time. So they hadn't even emerged yet. On one of the frames, I think I counted 5 of the queen cells. And they look like small peanuts, and you can often hear the bees inside, the queen bees, making sounds and moving around and whatnot. You can actually see them often too. So they're regenerating their queens. They're replacing and going for a fall push, which kind of surprised me, because this would be the time frame where they start getting rid of the drone bees, the boys, and getting them out of the colony, so the numbers are smaller for winter, and there's not so many to have the honey last all winter through. So it's really odd, but it seems like they're probably going to push for another split or swarm here, and that would happen probably within a week or so, because these queen cells were already, you can tell by somewhat the age because of the coloring and maybe how hard they are. So we're going to have some new queens here soon and some potential new beehives. So that's the great news. And again, they all look really healthy. The numbers were great. We're going to, we had 0 losses this entire year. So this would be our second year now with no colony collapse disorder losses, no massive infestation by mites or any of the other diseases that take beehives out. And we've done no treatments whatsoever, no chemicals of any kind on any beehive since the time we got them. So it's actually really great news.
What did you experience with the, during the time? First, I have to ask, how many days did it last having to put up with the haze of all that smoke from the wildfires?
Yeah, that was actually, we'll talk weeks. So it was probably at least 2 weeks, but we actually had official government warnings specifically in our little 5-block town of don't go outside. Don't breathe the air. If you do, get in your car, turn on the air conditioner, recirculate if you have to. But they gave us warnings, tape your windows, don't go outside, not just for people with breathing issues or the elderly or young or anything like that. It was across the board. If you're a living entity, do not breathe the air.
How did the bees fare through this time?
Well, they had no problem. And I really thought they would. So what I noticed was they stayed closer. They didn't leave the hive in the numbers as usual, and they didn't go as far, because you can sit right outside the beehives, the entrance, and watch the bees. You can track them through your yard, as far as you can follow them. So I'd see them leave the hive, go to our various bird baths, get their water supply, and go back to the hive. But they weren't really venturing too far out. So they definitely knew something was going on, and they knew the smoke was there. But it really had no losses for us. So I would say what it did do was slow down the colonies. So they did not get any honey in those weeks' time frame. But they have plenty of honey earlier in the season, so they're going to be just fine for the whole winter, which would be the only thing I would worry about. But no, they survived really well.
So did the hives multiply in number of hives, or did they just grow vertically up?
Actually, both. And they would have done numbers in hives if I had the opportunity and equipment to actually catch the hives that were out there, or the bee balls that were hanging. I put a few of the videos up. Yeah, so if I actually had the equipment, and at that time I didn't have the time, so there were lots of factors. But I could have captured those swarms, or the swarmers wouldn't be when they'd be in the air, and when they all accumulate around the queens in, say, a tree or the eave of your house or wherever, that would be a bee ball, and about the size of a basketball. So I can come up on those, and again, if I was ready and prepped and had the room, I could have captured those and doubled our hives this year. But we had no losses with just the hives we have. So
I just really saw a crazy YouTube video. I don't know if it was filmed somewhere in Thailand or Africa, because given the appearance, given the looks of the person and the terrain, but he's going to a bee ball. It appears to be like on the side of a tree. And he's grabbing the bees, handful of bees and sticking them in his shirt. And I'm looking at this, and I said to him, is this guy insane or what? He's doing exactly that. Instead of using something to capture the bee ball, he's just sticking it in his shirt. And he opens the shirt for the whoever is holding the camera. And his whole thing is full of bees. And he's got no reaction.
Oh, you should have. That's funny. You should have been here for when my son and I captured the last ball. I was doing it with my hands. I didn't. The ball was too high in the tree. So my son... We got an A-frame ladder out, and usually you try and get up there as close as you can and just kind of knock the ball into the box. Well, long story short, it didn't quite happen that way, so my son trusted me. We didn't have suits on, gloves, nothing like that, and he basically held the beehive box, a single deep box above his head, up into the tree, and just stood there and trusted his dad. So then I climbed the tree, and I shook what I could, but then, long story short, I just had to start grabbing the bees by the fistful with both hands. And you're really careful when you do this. Yeah, and so you grab them and just drop them in between the frames, because this empty box, you need to have at least half of it full of empty honey frames so that they have a place to start with. Yeah, so it's only really about halfway empty in there. So even if you did have a ball, half would land on it and fall off. But no, we both had bees all over us from head to toe completely covered. I was literally grabbing them by the fistful, and not one sting the entire time from either one of us, no issues whatsoever. And we actually had that hive that turned into Shanghai Beehive number 5. We actually did get the queen.
So
yeah, so that was good carry over.
So when you cut the openings into the metal side of the shed, I forget. I don't have a photographic memory. I know that you cut X number of openings, but not all of them were populated with hives. So now how many of the openings are active now?
We actually only filled in one more of the openings because, again, I didn't have the opportunity to catch the other swarms or balls that were out there. Yeah, so, but we had more than enough turnover and expansion of beehives to max out that bee shop you're referring to where I had the entrances cut into the side. Next spring, it will easily, these hives we have now will instantaneously be cut, doubled, so they'd be split by myself. And we'll have that to tend with in addition to all the swarms and everything else we experience every year. So it's really great news for all the bees. They're doing fantastic.
Yeah. This year, when you were posting videos on Facebook, I noticed you doing something that I didn't see you do last year, which is go up. Last year, I remember all your videos, all the hives were standard size. I don't know how you designate the height of the hive, but in this case, the video showed the hives going up in height. So you have multiple levels of frames, I guess. That's what you...
They'd be either honey boxes or brood boxes. And yeah, so what he's referring to is like if you look in the field, you see the bee boxes, generally white, basically growing taller, kind of like a skyscraper. I had to actually control ours this year because they were just growing so fast. And we're talking about not just bee numbers, but honey. Yeah, I couldn't even see them.
Like the movie The Blob. It just keeps growing as the movie
goes on. Yeah, the bee blob, but it's a good blob. Yeah, so they were getting really big. And so I would take boxes off, split hives, and bring them down to manageable sizes. But technically, I mean, I could have probably had 15-foot tall beehives if I really wanted to push it. But, of course, that's just an issue.
That's unmanageable to do something that
big. Yeah.
And also this year you tried that special attachment where you put the face-down jars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. We tried so we had some mason jars, basically had a frame cut out with circles in it and put the mason jars upside down, and the bees would – come to the, and this would be placed on top of the beehive rather than a beehive lid. So the bees would come from the lower boxes, come up into the jars, and actually I would basically start it off with a little bit of Shanghai beeswax on the bottom of the jars and then put them in place, and the bees just start building honeycomb off of that.
So did they fill those up?
No, they didn't get it filled up this year because of all the swarms and splits I had to do a movement of the hive. So I pretty much was I was a huge factor in that because I had so much moving to do. We were at a new location.
Yeah.
And beehives had to be moved around. Yeah. I basically had to break them down. So I kept, Yeah, there's a lot going on this year. So I had to manage them too much to where normally I don't do much managing of the bees. They take care of themselves and there's no, I'm not involved. The shungites and them are what does it. So this year was a little different from normal, but next year, hopefully we'll get a lot more of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really amazed that there was no sickness at all. I'm not amazed, but I mean, just 2 years, it was just, even that I'm using shungite this long now with the bees, I'm still thinking, okay, there's going to be something, but it's not. There's just nothing happened with the bees negative.
And just like in the old mm-hmm. house, you had no issues with wasps coming to attack the bees.
No, well, the wasps did show up because now if I talk about the wasps, there was extreme numbers this year, but because the bees were such plentiful in numbers and so healthy, you could see the wasps land at the entrance and they'll come and pick up deceased bees from under the entrance. Because bees will...
So they're doing cleanup.
That's it. Yeah, they couldn't get in. So they couldn't take any living bees, so they'd come get the cleanup. But yeah, they weren't getting in the hive, where often the wasps would get in the hive and just kill an entire beehive. We had no problems with that.
Oh, my God. Mm. Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. The bad news is that we're not going to be able to sell the honey because there's not... Well, there would be enough for some beekeepers, but not Derek. So we're going to have to do something different with the honey. We'll get into it if we can, but he's not going to harvest any honey this year. So don't expect a Christmas gift of honey, Walter.
Yeah, the honey is limited. Yeah, it's going to be limited, unfortunately. We still have some, you know, of course, from last year and whatnot, and we'll make what we have available, but it's really limited because we're just going to leave. We're in a new location deep in the mountains. It's our first winter out here. And after a severe snowstorm last year that was unexpected and unusual, I'm going to be a little extra cautious this year. So we're just leaving the bees as necessary, you know, all their honey. So they're going to have more than enough to carry over, and there'll be no problems. So it's, yeah, it'll be a lot of harvest.
One of the things that you shared with Nancy after last winter was that those hives that were painted with shungite paint, those are the ones that survived the cold. Now are all the hives painted or only some of them?
Nope, they're all painted now. And there's a lot of other differences too, because now they have the bee shop or shed. And so, but no, they are all painted to answer your questions. But there are a lot of other variables that we're just going to basically, you know, figure out as it happens this year. And every environment for beehives is different. And actually, from year to year, of course, because of the extreme weather changes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
well,
it's
interesting.
But the numbers, you're going into the winter with a large number in the hive itself. Last year, because they throw out the drones. The males, because they can make new ones in the spring and they don't need them eating the honey during the winter. Sounds reasonable to me. So you've got a situation where you're going into the winter with larger numbers in the hive. Is that what you're thinking too?
Yes, I was looking at that too. And, you know, you can't exactly count the bees specifically, but you get an idea of the number of drones versus workers and whatnot. And we do have much 50% larger numbers still in the hives at this time compared to last year. So, and it's hard for me to know who's who in there because there's a lot of movement and a lot of bees. We're still, I think, 3 boxes high. So we're still almost 4 foot high beehives going into winter. So, and the boxes are all full of bees. So it's not like, so when I got in there, generally you would take off the top box. There's not going to be many bees, maybe just honey, a few bees. And as you get lower, the bees start to accumulate denser and denser in numbers until you get down to where the brood is and the queen around. And then they'll have a bee ball inside the bottom box. Well, in our case, they decided to have a really big bee ball and have it continue up through 2 to 3 boxes and lay just massive numbers of brood. So if I was to even cut down these hives to 1 or 2 boxes, I'd be yanking out brood frames as well. Beekeepers will put in queen excluders, so think just a cage or a metal bars between the boxes so the queen can't get up any higher, but it limits the size of the beehive. And but it does put some, it gives the queen more room to lay eggs, hence a bigger colony. And that's what we're about, to where, for instance, your commercial beekeeper would put the queen excluder because they don't want necessarily have larvae or eggs in the honey frames. No, you know, we're not really, honey's not our purpose, so I'm not worried about that. I'd rather have more nurseries for the bees to expand. But when you do that, you're going to end up with a bigger beehive like we have in huge numbers. So it's kind of, you know, depends what you're, what you have bees for. If it's for honey, it's a whole different factor. But if it's, you know, about survival of the bees and survival of us, well, you want to give them all the room you can and room to expand and let them eat their own honey and not take it away in the wintertime and give them sugar. So actually it all, everything looks really good. So I have nothing negative to say as far as the beehives, and they look really strong going in the winter. If anything, again, like you were mentioning, really strong.
Derek, they got the babies. They got you got this space. You got these bedrooms, and they can use them for storage rooms, i.e., honey, or that they can use them for nurseries. Now, are you saying that these babies that you're seeing now may come to life before winter, or will they be able to sort of put them in a dormant state through winter?
Actually, both things are going to happen. So they're going to, the queen will generally stay in the middle of these boxes. So there's 10 frames. She'll stay in the bottom box, in the middle, 4 or 5 frames. And unless you're like what we do with no excluder, you can go up in the boxes. She'll stay in the middle and continue laying eggs in the middle, which will, now, the numbers will slow down, but yes, the numbers will still generate. There'll be new bees born and carried over. But we basically gave them 2 extra nurseries so they have stronger numbers to last through the winter. And the reason other beekeepers don't do that is because they want the honey. They don't want to leave the bees 2 full boxes of honey to feed that many bees. They try and get by with just the bare minimum bees to get over the winter time so they don't eat their own honey, and then they can start a new colony in the spring. Well, I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. So that's why we do it differently.
Wow. So you can put
that on your business card. It's not about getting it down to bare minimum.
So you can put that on your business card. There it comes, the humane beekeeper.
I'm sure there's lots of bees. Yeah. Think bees first. There you go. Yeah, think of the bees first, not the honey or anything like that. And then everything changes. That's the difference. So we will have larger hives to winter over, as it's called. But again, I mean, it's about the bees. So,
yep, no bees, no beekeepers.
that's a great point. You're very right. Yeah,
that's like being a carpenter in a planet where there's no wood. Well, you're not a carpenter anymore. Good news for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, it makes me just feel so excited about what's happening. But you actually went through a brutal season here with the fires. And I'm sure that, you know, I never really was worried about the bees and the smoke, because I believed that the smoke would be dissipated from the hives because of the shungite. And so I knew that they weren't going to be living inside the smoke. And I thought that the fact that they've got the little powder on them as they fly would probably protect them too. And you saw no detrimental effect on the numbers of your hives, and yet what happened to your neighbors?
Yeah, and it's looking that way for the neighbor and beekeepers as well this year. Their numbers are hugely down. And how you can tell that right away is just look under your hive. As I mentioned before, you can see the bees start to pile up to different degrees under the entrance, and that's normal, especially for this time of year, where maybe theirs are a couple inches deep of the bee corpses, where ours aren't. And when you open the hive, all of our boxes are still full of worker bees, to where theirs are a lot more limited in numbers. And again, a lot of that's due to their chemical treatments as well. And then, of course, the lack of shungite. It's just huge differences in numbers and the results we're getting in our bee colonies compared to
not the surprised local. If shungite is impacting their longevity from whatever the average is to a longer period.
I absolutely think that's happening. I don't think there's a doubt about that. Yep. It's definitely doing that, and they're much stronger. I can't even – generally, I should be able to open up the beehive, look at the bees just on the top of the box, and maybe glance at 100 of them and see some mites, see some deformed wings, a deformed bee body or something. That's actually, unfortunately, normal, but not in the Shungite beehives. I mean, again, if they're just kept away from the chemicals and then in the Shungite environment, it's a fact having an effect on them more than we even know at this time, because we're just talking about the attenuation of the frequencies and maybe removal of chemicals and whatnot, but it's affecting their genetics as well and their longevity, as you mentioned, because I'm not getting the deformities. I'm not getting the early die-offs.
Right then and there, you have genetic repair. That's DNA repair. Deformation means only one thing, is that the cells are unable to replicate correctly. That's chromosome damage, which is, genetics. So what you're seeing, it's being repaired. Whatever was causing it, it's not so much that you're removing, because, okay, you remove the chemicals, but you still have the electrosmog or whatever, and, energy contamination. Well, all of that's being dealt with. So now they're actually now, without all that stress, energy stresses, chemical stresses, now the genetics is free and has the necessary energies to improve itself, come out even with a stronger, more powerful bee.
That's just like us. Exactly. Get around that Shungite, get it in your environment, get in your drink of water, and it makes you healthy. And the bees are being reverted back to their optimal health is what it appears to be doing. The aggression's gone as the generations pass. And we the ones from California, this is who we started with, were aggressive as the weeks pass and the new generations were born. That was all gone. All of it was gone. The health was maintained the entire year.
Yeah.
Well, now, Walt, you're saying the aggression could be tied to the genetics. Was it the genetics that were the fact that they were now healthy and didn't have to be aggressive?
I think you meant Derek, not Walt.
Yeah, and I think the chemicals might have been antagonizing. They were chemically treated bees for their entire life in California when we got them as a nook, as a test this year. So they were just chemically treated from birth in that environment, and then right away taken out of that environment up here, and the aggression gone. So that's a good point. But removing those chemicals and getting them in the new environment had an effect, not just physiologically, but obviously on their behavior as well. I haven't had to shoot up at all. Again, I'm walking in front of these bees every day here, moving things around. There's no stinging, no aggression.
So then those poor bees can't even be labeled natural. There's nothing natural about them. They're being altered from the very start of their lifespan.
Just like us.
Are you talking about Shungite, or are you talking about the chemicals? Because we're Shungite's altering them too. It's just in the positive way.
Correct. Well, I think that what Shungite is doing is allowing them, giving them what they need, energy-wise, to revert to their optimal state. So it's like not only are you doing away with the chemicals, that's one thing, but also give them something to repair the damage that was done by the chemicals and by, all the energetic emissions. Okay, so here's an antidote for technocratic life, in a way. Yeah, I'm going to protect you from all this technology here.
So because I like this, you're suggesting that the Shungite provides the proto-energy to be able to repair. You've stopped it, the chemical pollution in the environment, the Wi-Fi environment, but now, on top of that, the Shungite opens the quantum field to give you the proto-energy to repair, in this case, the bees themselves, correct?
Well, exactly. Look at it. What has been the observed effect of Shungite on humans? Everybody reports the detoxing effect. What is that detoxing effect? Shungite is helping you get rid of all this crap produced by technological life. And that's why you have to undergo, all kinds of physical symptoms, emotional outbursts, because all this crap energy is being detoxed, is coming out of you. And that's coming out of, thankfully, by the instrumentality of the Shangha. It's giving you that energy field in the Shangha. It's constantly transmuting, you know, negative energies into positive energy and neutralizing, you know, negative stuff. That's why, remember when we were talking about Oregonite over the Skype, and you asked my opinion about the people that incorporate Shangite into their Oregonite, and you asked me if I thought they also need to put that in the sunlight to clear it. And I said, I don't think they need to put it out in the sunlight, because as that Oregonite is getting, it's pulling in all this negative argon, it's also being transmuted by the presence of the Shangite. So in my opinion, I don't need to put that Oregonite out in the sun. And that's one thing. It's fine to get rid of the negative stuff. Okay, but we need to fix the damage that was done by the negative stuff, and that's what Shangite is doing. It's allowing all these repairs to happen.
Okay, we are actually at the two-hour mark when we're over time, but I think it's only fair to our audience to have Derek explain why there was a shutdown of an Oregonite seller on Etsy. Derek, weren't you the one that had looked into it further? And
Yeah, I looked into a little bit of that, and from what I saw was they'd actually found one manufacturer of the Oregon devices that had a questionable ingredient that could potentially have a radiological, reading to it come off. So they actually, it was never tested, it looked like, but because they had the potential of having a glass in it, there was certain glass from a long time ago that had, and Walt may know more about this, but radioisotopes in it. And so because that was mixed in, they thought that there was a potential for it to have a radiation issue. I don't think it was really something to be worried about with that particular one, but that was what the fuss was about.
So it was all just based on suspicion, not actual
proof? That's from everything I saw, and that's what it came out as. And it wasn't a Etsy-wide thing. It's Oregon devices are still available on there, just certain ones weren't.
I just found it.
Ingredients is what.
I just found it preposterous that they were watching the Etsy Oregonite sales to who the heck is doing that? You know. <it's> like, what are they looking for? But listen, guys, thank you so much for an awesome show. Derek is on cosmicreality.net. He's one of our team, but he's also on shungitebeehives.com, and that's the forum, and that's where you can learn a lot more about Shungite and the beehives and stay up to date on what's happening. Walt's website is newparadigmtools.net, newparadigmtools.net, sorry, Walt. And you can look and see what devices he has, because we don't carry all of Walt's devices because we couldn't possibly. You've got a problem, talk to Walt. He'll figure out a device to get rid of it. Thank you, Walt. You want to say good night?
Good night, everybody. Thank you. First off, thank you, Derek, for being with us. It's wonderful to hear, you know, about your progress on the stuff that it, every time you talk, you know, you share something new regarding the bees. So again, thank you for being here with us, and thank you, lovely listeners, for being spending another evening with us. Good night, everybody.
And Derek.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
We love you, honey. Okay, so everybody be safe. Be blessed. We're going to go to the other station, and we're going to repeat the Shungite show from earlier today that I'm telling you, it's awesome. It was an awesome show. Julie Roberts is somebody to listen to. And we work with the energy of the water that came down with Florence. It's just amazing. So I highly recommend that you listen to it or wait a few days. I'll have it up on YouTube. Thank you, thank you, thank you all for just a wonderful time, and appreciate you, Derek, and appreciate you, Mr. Walt Silva. All right, we're out of here. Thanks, guys. Thank you for listening to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, produced by Haggy Shack Radio and simulcast over Cosmic Reality Radio.